So Nelson Nash has something that has stuck with me since the first time I read it in his book here. He called it stealing the peas. When you hear it, maybe it'll be obvious to you. But the truth is, there's still a lot of people practicing infinite banking who steal the peas and they may not even know it.
And here's what you're going to understand by the end of this episode. Why repaying your policy loans isn't just a good habit, it's a critical aspect to the infinite banking concept. You're also going to understand why the people who skip repaying policy loans, in other words, they're stealing the peas, are the exact people who will look up in 10 years and wonder why the system didn't work for them. And why Nelson Nash considered this the one behavior that separates people who become their own banker from people who just simply own whole life insurance.
And Paul and I are going to teach you why repaying loans is so important, how to make loan repayment painless, and how if you can reframe your thinking from being a consumer to being a banker, all of this becomes second nature. It's just the way you do life.
This is a concept episode. No charts, no illustrations, just the idea that changes how this works for you forever.
Let's get into it. Well, all right, buddy. It is it's rainy baseball season for us here. Blake is supposed to have his first baseball game tonight, but it's raining all day long. I'm sure they won't. They'll cancel it.
Nope. Tough to play baseball in the rain. Is it chilly too, like in the 40s or something?
Yeah, 50s. So it's not that bad. It's just, you know, all the fields around here are pretty nice and nobody wants to tear up their fields,
right?
Which I get. If I was the field manager, whoever that is, I'd be canceling games left and right too.
Sure. Yeah. And I remember, like, as a pitcher in high school, in this one particular game, junior year, it was raining lightly. And we played with the same two baseballs the entire game, right?
Yeah.
So by the end of the game, this thing weighs, like, it's like throwing a shot put. Like, it's, like, 3 pounds, you know, and I'm 110 pounds probably soaking wet throwing a baseball, you know, 70 miles. And I was soaking wet. But anyway, yeah, I just remember it being miserable playing spring baseball in New England or, you know, I'm sure Minnesota.
Yeah, in Minnesota, I mean, you know, the beginning and the end of the season, not that the Twins ever make it to the end of the season. You know, they're never playing in October. Oh, but, you know, the beginning of the season can be pretty cold. I've been to an opening day one year where it was like 75 degrees. And the next year I went, it was like 45 degrees.
Mm.
So yeah, you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, it's miserable for the fans, too.
Yeah, it takes the fun out. Hannah and I go to one game every year and sit right behind home plate because we have a neighbor who has season tickets right there and we buy them from him when the Royals are in town.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we do that once a year, splurge on some good tickets, and you know, you get the whole dinner and all the treats and drinks included.
Yeah. Do you think there's any Leering centers we could buy down near the stadium, perhaps?
Either that or hospices. I might buy some hospices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take some policy loans out, buy a Leering Center.
Hey, I use my loans for opportunities.
That's right.
You know, they'd be paying them back real quick, being in those businesses, be paying those loans back. So, which actually is what we're going to talk about today. So let's talk about stealing the peas.
Yeah.
I got out my original Becoming Your Own Banker 5th Edition book that I got back in 2010. And went to page 15, the grocery store, and just read through that again today.
Yeah, I love it.
Such a good read, and it's almost like every time I read it, something else stands out to me.
Yes.
But this is one of those things, I think so many business owners don't get it. And probably because nobody's explained it to them. You think, oh, I have a business, you know, so I buy all this inventory wholesale. Well, I'm not going to buy it from myself for retail price if I want to use it myself. So, of course, I'm just going to take it off the shelf and take it home with me. Right? And that's the whole thing about this. So, you want to give everybody kind of an overview. First, if you're listening and you're not driving, maybe grab your book and read that. It's only 2 pages. Read that summary and then turn the episode back on. But maybe give...
What page, Dave?
It's page 15.
Page 15, the grocery store.
15 and 16, the grocery store example. So what is Nelson talking about when he's saying, don't steal the peas?
Well, he's trying to, you know, get people to, you know, he picked a business kind of analogy that everyone would understand. Everyone is a consumer, right, of a grocery store. If you own a grocery store, though, you're both the owner and consumer of the grocery store, right? So he's trying to get you to just, you know, set the stage, understand that basic premise, and then from there, realize that if you're owning the grocery store and you're consuming it, right, you want whoever's doing the grocery shopping in your family, in our case, it's mostly Tammy nowadays, but I want her to pay for the groceries that she took off the shelf and go out the front door just like every other paying customer, right? Instead of what Nelson says, stealing the peas by going out the back door, right? Just because of many reasons, one of which your employees will see her doing that, and then they'll think, well, if the boss is doing it, then, you know, it's good to be the king. I'll go do it too.
Yeah, which is crazy, but that is human nature. And I've heard this from so many business owners that, you know, maybe they were using the stamps at work to send off their personal mail. Well, yeah, that's great until your employees see it and they think, oh, well, if the boss does it, even though he's the one that paid for everything or it's his business, then it's okay for me to do. So yeah, you gotta lead by example. But the whole thing of, because Nelson also talks about if you really want this business to be worth something, because what's the whole point of somebody
building a business and then sell it?
Right. And if you sell it, they're going to look for the book. They're going to look through the books, whoever the buyer is. And if you've been not accounting for your own groceries over the last 20 years that you've owned this store, and you're taking them all out the back of the store versus taking them out the front and paying retail, or as Nelson says, pay a little bit above retail. You know, if your total bill comes to $50, maybe throw in an extra $5 for the books. You know, your business is going to look so much better and going to be so much more valuable. And that's the exact same thing with the infinite banking concept. If you treat your policies or series and system of policies like a legitimate business, then it's going to do so much more for you than it otherwise would.
He famously said that, you know, out of all the actors in the play, you know, you are the most important, and how you treat your system is the most important thing. We could talk about direct recognition, non-direct recognition, PUA and base premium ratios. You could talk about all that stuff to your blue in the face, but the most important detail in the whole thing is you and how you treat your system.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why you talk to some people and they want to research every different mutual life insurance company to figure out what the best company is. Well, I'm telling you, there's a handful of companies that have been paying out dividends for well over 100 years. They've been around for well over 100 years. They're very, very good at what they do. The biggest differentiator is going to be you, the owner of the policy. Are you living that lifestyle that, you know, another chapter in here is called Use It or Lose It? Are you using your system? And using it doesn't mean just taking loans to fund, you know, to finance the things of life, like Nelson says, versus paying cash or getting bank financing. It's using loans to finance the things of life and then repaying those loans. You're treating it like an actual bank that you own. You know, and that's going to make all the difference, how you operate your own system. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you're stealing the peas, right? I mean, there's obviously consequences. And this is, you know, fundamental, you know, basic understanding is that you're not borrowing your own money. You're borrowing money from the life insurance company that you're part owner of. So by virtue of repaying your loans and playing honest banker, right, you are helping make that company profitable, and you own that company, and that company is guaranteeing the collateral, and it's going to pay you a dividend on your policy every year. Not guaranteed, but very reliable, as Dave just said, right? So it's the whole thing, right? The whole equation is enhanced by your behavior. That's why IBC business, for generally good IBC business for life insurance companies, for these mutual companies that we all own, is good business for them, because we teach our clients how to use the system, how to enter in. You know, there's a debate out there on whether they like the policy loans and, you know, whatever. But, you know, if you're repaying loans, it's good business for the company. It's good business for them anyway, but it's good, really good business, especially if you're playing honest banker. So
yeah,
repay
exactly.
Your loans.
Yeah, it's good for you. It's good for the company. The company doesn't need you to repay your loans necessarily, but it's better for the company if you do. And it's certainly better for you, because that's just more money you get to recycle and reuse an infinite amount of time. times. You know, that's why do you think Nelson called it infinite banking? You're reusing money, and your creativity is unlimited as well.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And the larger your pool of capital that you have available to yourself, the financial landscape is going to continue to get better and better and better for you over time. And the opportunities that you'll start to see will be better, more secure, and more profitable as well.
Yeah, right. You know, I want to hit on one other little thing in the book that we don't need to spend a lot of time on because it could be a whole topic on its own, but EVA, economic value add.
Mm.
You know, the difference between, I see this a lot, people who've saved up money, they don't really apply a value to that beyond just the dollar amount that's in the bank account. And I was thinking about it today because I was listening to this book on Audible, actually this chapter, and something Nelson said about EVA made me think, you know what, if I was somebody who just saved money in a bank and I was going to go spend cash on a new car, the way I think a lot of people might look at it is I got $50,000 in cash in the bank for a car. So they're thinking, how much do I have to spend versus how good of a deal can I get on a car? Because they don't place that much value on this cash beyond what it can buy for them. They don't think about that there's actually a cost to that capital that you need to. So if you're spending cash on a bank, I'm going to go spend all 50, you know, whatever I can get. When you have to take a loan against your cash and borrow, you're going to be a little more judicial and put a lot more thought into that because your capital actually has an economic value above and beyond just that dollar amount.
Yeah. And I suppose in a way over time, it's the way most of us or most of you are thinking about that is, you know, like, well, I'm not earning much in my savings account anyway, so I might as well go use it on this and not have a bill. But I don't disagree, but if you just would originate that same $50,000, if that money would originate from a different place, a whole life insurance policy, it will still be growing for you in the background, even while you're using it. So that's just, you know, and that's the value, right? So if you value your capital, that should be appetizing to you and say, well, wow, I didn't realize a whole life policy worked like that. Does it really do that? Yes, it really does. You want to enjoy uninterrupted compounding of your money forever. Right? You never want to interrupt that compound line because once you do, you've permanently disrupted what it could have been. So, and that's so basic and so obvious, but again, nobody thinks about it.
Yeah. The best liquidity is the kind that doesn't require liquidation. And there's only a few places you can get that in life. And in almost every place, you have to ask for permission.
Right. This is the easiest way.
This is the easiest. This is the simplest, the easiest, most straightforward, no permission.
Most guaranteed.
Required. Yeah. As long as somebody can physically qualify for it, you can do it. So it's interesting. One of the things I notice with clients after about a year, maybe we check in, see where you're at. And I realize, you know, one of the big things is everybody's saving up for that next premium. And, you know, maybe they've taken a loan during that year and they're not paying it back. They have an outstanding loan. And I say, oh, you've got an outstanding loan of $5,000. Yeah. Well, I'm going to pay that back, but you know, I've been saving up for next year's premium so I can make that in a single annual payment. Well, where are you saving that up? In the bank account. So great. You're being disciplined. You're saving it, right? So you can make that annual payment. That's awesome. But you got to go back to the most basic question. Where's the best place for my money to reside? Well, I'm telling you right now, if you have an outstanding loan, that's likely the best place for your money to reside.
Yes.
Like 99 times out of 100, that's going to be the best place as opposed to putting it anywhere else. To me, it's just someone still hasn't made that shift from thinking as a consumer to thinking as a banker on what's the most productive use of my dollars? Where should they be residing right now?
Yeah. You know, you've dug a hole with a $5,000 policy loan. You should fill it back up with all available cash flow as soon as possible. It's as simple as that, regardless of next year's premium. If you have to pull a small loan to pay some of the premium, so be it.
Yep. Doesn't matter. You'll either have a loan before you pay the premium, an outstanding loan, or you have an outstanding loan after you pay the premium. Like if you have outstanding loan, that's where your dollar should go.
Yeah. You'll be more efficient, right? You'll cut your interest costs by just paying off that loan faster, quicker.
Yeah. Right. So that's probably like the number one reason I hear people saying why they're telling me why they're not repaying their loans.
You know, they just need a little bit of clarity on the mechanics and just kind of a rethinking of their thinking, right? And a little bit of coaching on that. And once it's a quick conversation. And once you have, they're like, oh yeah, that makes total sense. I was like, yeah, you're earning 3% in your savings account anyway. Maybe you're earning 4%, maybe you're earning 2%, whatever, or maybe you're earning 1%, your policy loans at 5%. Well, eliminate that. You just got you just saved yourself 5%.
Right. Because you need to understand, if you're new to this concept, you're paying interest on that money because you didn't borrow your own money. You borrowed the insurance company's money. They have an interest rate on that. The sooner you pay back any amount of that, the less interest now you're accruing, because it only accrues on the outstanding balance. That's it. So it's a race. To me, it's a race and a game. How quickly can I repay this loan? It's kind of fun.
It is fun. It's nice not having any outstanding loans of any type, really.
Yeah. But these are the ones I don't lose sleep over.
No.
Right? Which brings me to another reason people say they're not repaying loans. Well, there's no bill. Nobody's sending me a bill saying I owe this money. Nobody's calling me. Nobody's knocking on the door. It's not urgent to repay these loans. Of course it's not, because you're 100% in charge of the repayment schedule. So it's not urgent. Does that mean you shouldn't repay them? I mean, it's not urgent, but could it be important?
It's certainly important. And you got to remember, right? When you make a policy loan repayment, it's not like you're saying goodbye to that money. You're just freeing up the lien that was created on that cash. The cash is still there. There's a lien on it, right? So you're freeing that money up to use again. So there's not really a good reason not to keep making periodic payments on, if you can. Now, again, there's going to be circumstances where you're waiting for a windfall from an opportunity there or whatever. But, you know, but the bread and butter kind of, hey, I'm borrowing against the value of my policy to go buy the car. You should be repaying at least the commercial rate against your policy loan. And paying, so if the car payment would have been $600, pay back $605 or $650.
Yeah, because it's your business. Just like Nelson says in the grocery store example, instead of paying 60 cents or 57 cents for that can of peas, you should pay 62 cents, throw in another nickel. It just goes to the bottom line. And in your case, of your policy, it just repays your loan that much quicker.
Yeah, repays the loan quicker.
And less interest over time.
Less interest over time. And if you have some outstanding paid-up additions, maybe, that maybe you're playing catch-up on a previous year, maybe, you could throw... Now that you've developed that disciplined behavior, maybe you're making a little bit more money this year, you throw that a little bit of extra cash against that PUA rider as well, which will expand your capital base.
Yep, exactly. That's what Nelson talks about. Why should you charge yourself more interest? Expand your capital base. That's it. Repay loans quicker and expand your capital base. So now when my loan is out, Paul, is my cash value, you say it's still growing. Why is that?
Well, I would say very simply, because that's what the contract says. There's contractual growth to the policy, and then so that's going to be a value that you're going to be able to count on every single year, right? And then there's non-guaranteed dividends, which, again, we've discussed ad nauseum, but it's all, you know, very, very reliable, like every single year for the last 118 years or better, right? So that's the other way the policy grows. And we prefer what's called non-direct recognition companies, who will still provide us the full dividend, even if we have the money leveraged, right? So even if I have a loan out, there's some companies called direct recognition companies that might penalize you a little bit. You might get the full dividend, right? Well, you will not, depending on what your contract says. We don't generally prefer non-direct recognition. So yeah, but that doesn't mean I'm kind of borrowing and not really, like, everything's still growing, I'm fine. That's true. You are fine. The policy is still growing, but that's not the point. We don't want to steal the peas. We want to treat our system with respect. And again, the mindset is, if you wouldn't have taken a loan from a bank, then you shouldn't really have taken a loan against your policy, generally. Maybe emergencies are the exception, right? You're not going to call the bank up for them because they're not going to care and they're not going to give you money anyway. So the emergency is kind of an exception there, but.
Right. Or the things you're saving up for. You know, you got to save up for a new car, right? Or you're going to take a bank loan. Well, either one of those are good great reason to take a policy loan. So here's one that I hear from people a lot, and this is usually people right at the beginning of their infinite banking journey, and they say, well, I don't want to put everything into my policy because I like to have cash available.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I understand it. There's comfort in seeing this pile of cash in a bank account that you could get to in 2 seconds if you needed it. Right? There's a comfort in that.
Mm-hmm.
But what's it doing for you? Besides maybe creating more exposure and liability, especially if you're a business owner. You know, cash on a bank account, well, that's exposure. That's liability. Cash on a whole life, dividend-paying whole life insurance policy, that could be a different story.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, if you're a business owner, you've got your operating income, and we have plenty of client business owners, and I understand, every month is different. Right. So what we're not saying is like, yeah, just drain your business checking, your personal checking account and the safe. Right. That's not what we're saying. But what we are saying is, generally what you need to operate month to month. But beyond that, especially if you've got outstanding loans, like take that extra cash and it's going to be available to you again. Right. You repay the loan. You could take the money right back out a couple weeks later. So and of course, I think this, Dave, psychologically gets. The deeper you get into the infinite banking concept process and the more years tick by and those policies get more and more and more mature, eventually there's so much more liquidity than you're used to having. And now that you've taken loans, you've repaid loans, you're getting comfortable with, kind of interacting with your policies, right? Logging into the portal and doing it all and repaying loans and taking loans and paying premium. You get more comfortable over time and it becomes second nature and it just becomes natural. So I think we got there very early, was completely 100% comfortable. I don't remember if I kept money in a savings account. I don't think I did because I kept it all in my policy. So,
well, maybe you did because you didn't have enough room in your policies early on. Maybe you had
very
maxed
possible.
Them out and then it's, hey, I'm still stacking cash somewhere else. Well, it's time for it's time to expand your system.
Yeah.
Naturally.
That's right.
Yeah. So I tell people, they say, well, I don't want to put all of my emergency savings in there. Okay. Do you have a credit card? Yeah. That's your emergency. That's your emergency fund right there, is whip out the credit card. You need new tires, you need the AC fixed, credit card. Guess what? When that comes, you got net 30 on that. So 30 days later, when that bill comes due, if you need to borrow, take a cash value loan, you can do that and pay off the credit card bill. You don't need to keep your cash sitting in an account just so you're comfortable with it. Your comfort is getting in the way of your wealth. It really is.
Ooh,
your goal
like
should
that.
Be to be, yeah, your real goal should be to become comfortable thinking like a banker. And that takes time. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take time and maybe baby steps along the way, but your ultimate goal is you want to be comfortable thinking like a banker. All right. What about, here's one more. I understand this coming from a traditional perspective. I don't want to pay my loans back quickly, Paul, because then I don't have that cash anymore. That's exactly the case with a bank loan. You pay, whoever told you it was a good idea to give the bank, money quicker than they asked for it. But, you say, well, I'm going to pay this back quicker, but then it's gone. I don't have it anymore. And I might need to keep that cash on hand for liquidity purposes. What do you say to that?
Well, your life insurance contract, right? The ledger value that's there, right? That you have contractual access to the cash value, right? The present value of the death benefit, the equity. That is a cash equivalent. Yeah, you're not going to get to it right now, but you can get to it in a couple of days. And like Dave just said, the AC breaks or whatever. Hey, there's same as, I always look, here's what I do. I always look for these opportunities where it's 6 months, same as cash, 12 months, same as cash. I love those. I've got my furniture out there through Ethan Allen and we did 12 months, same as cash. We'll just come and do like this fall or something. So we'll pay it off. It makes that initial pain of furnishing the house kind of, you spread it out over a period of time, right? So I look for those opportunities all the time because I want to preserve my cash, preserve my capital because I like liquidity. But really, it's just that's a misunderstanding of what's going on. Again, you are not borrowing your money. Your money, your value is still in the policy, right? You borrowed against that value. You borrowed against a contract. right? So as you replenish that, it's just like a revolving door of money. It's like, it's kind of like a credit card with just better interest rates and better terms because you control all the terms as well. But when you pay off, let's say you've got a $10,000 credit card limit and the AC went out and that was 10 grand, right? And you paid off the 10 grand. Well, now that credit, right? That $10,000 of credit is now available to you again. And this works the same way, just with far better terms, obviously.
Yeah.
And as a growing asset.
Growing every day. But you talk about preserving your capital. That's why, like, you know, my wife was asking me, hey, should we pay this next year's tuition up front? I said, well, do I get a savings? Do I get a cost savings if we pay the full year in advance? And no, it's the same as paying, you know, over the next 10 months. Well, then I'm paying monthly. Because guess what? Yes, would it be comfortable to make one big payment, get that out of the way and be done with it? Like, whew, I don't have to think about that anymore. Yeah, emotionally, that would have been comfortable back when I thought like a consumer. But I've transitioned my thinking to thinking like more of a banker, where no, that would be the most uncomfortable decision now, because I gave away my liquidity before I had to. So I want to maintain maximum access to capital for as long as possible, which is funny because that's how the financial institutions operate. They want to hold on to your money as long as possible and give it back to you in as little chunks as possible over the longest time period possible. Think about it. That's exactly how they act. That's how I act with my capital.
Now they do. I mean, just try to, like, you know, switch financial advisors or move your money from one brokerage to another. They will drag their feet, right?
Yeah.
Try to convince you, like, oh, this is a huge mistake, whatever. I will say surrendering your policy for cash is a colossal mistake, obviously. That's a totally different... Well, they don't know what's going on.
Yeah, the more money you have and the more value that's going to leave that institution, the longer they're going to take. You know, the more of a fight they'll put up.
Yep. In fact, I need to call the TSB probably today, right after this, to see where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So those rationalizations are like the old way of thinking creeping in, right? They use the right words, but underneath that thinking, it's still the consumer mindset. It's not the infinite banking concept mindset. Think like a banker. Nelson Nash didn't invent a product. He described and created a process. And the process only works if you show up to it thinking like a banker, not someone who just got access to cheap money.
Right. Yep.
Thank you.
Very well said. But we've talked about this before. Think like a banker. Treat your money like a bank, not a piggy bank. Don't act like this is just, I mean, if you were to give that policy to your child, make them the owner, without the education and the right mindset, they're going to treat it like a piggy bank. They're going to be, oh, look at all this cash value. I'm just going to take it and go buy stuff.
That little plastic plug is going to come right out of the bottom of that thing, right?
It's probably going to be more like a hammer to that porcelain pig and just shatter it. That'd be a lot more satisfying.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, banks keep money in motion, right? They make loans. They take deposits. They make loans. They keep money in motion. We're doing the same thing. The great thing is when my money's not actively doing two jobs at one time, it's at least doing one, which is by putting it into a policy, it's actually doing a couple jobs even there.
For sure.
It's building an asset, a permanent asset, and that death benefit that's going to pay out when I die. And it's growing at a contractual rate plus guarantee plus dividends. So it's funny. I was at the VA today talking to a doctor. And he asked what I did, and I mentioned, you know, life insurance, and he's like, yeah, I never really got on board with life insurance and all that, you know, so I told him, he asked a couple questions, I told him, and I was like, you know, there's always the death benefit portion of it. He's like, oh yeah, I mean, the part that pays out if you die. And I said, pays out when you die, if it's permanent life insurance. So he's like, yeah, like he didn't
One
even
word.
Know that, yeah, that it will pay out when you die, not if you die.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm really convinced that if people really understood the mechanics of a dividend paying whole life insurance policy, forget vanilla whole life. I mean, it's got a purpose too, but dividend paying whole life is what we work with here.
Mm-hmm.
I really think a lot of people's minds would change if they really understood how it worked and what they were actually, if we could show them, and we do show them, I guess, like what you're giving up by not having it. There's so many doors, financial doors that can open because you have permanent death benefit in place that, you know, your typical financial advisor doesn't know about and isn't thinking about either because he's not paid to, right? He's paid to get your money under management or do whatever else he's going to do with it. It's a shame, but it opens up a lot of other just financial products to you that otherwise really don't make sense to use because you're using them, you're going to use it like the reverse mortgage. You're going to have to use that from a position of weakness rather than a position of strength and strategically.
Yeah, that's a good point. It does create, because other institutions, they understand a guarantee when they see it. And they know these life insurance companies, like that guarantee is a guarantee. It's not a risk for another financial institution. They know, I mean, so many of the financial transactions in the world involve life insurance. And we don't even know about it. Because these companies have been around for so long and they're so guaranteed. This is a guaranteed product. All you got to do is keep the premium, keep paying the minimum premium. And it's guaranteed to pay out.
You know, it's interesting. You go into any major city, and I was in Indianapolis, right? And I sent you a couple of photos of some financial buildings there. And people don't realize that a lot of those buildings you're looking at were financed by life insurance companies or by other insurance companies. But life insurance companies in particular.
Yeah, I forgot. I was just watching a movie. It was an older movie. I forgot what it was, but it showed like a New York City landscape and they were coming, you know, zooming in on it. And the one of the tallest buildings, skyscrapers there had the name of a life insurance company on it. You know, not many people would recognize that unless they know the different life insurance companies, but there it was, plain as day, just bold letters staring
right
at it.
Was it John Hancock?
No, it was Herbie Hancock.
Herbie Hancock.
Yeah.
Well, that is true. Oh my God. I mean, I highlighted to a guy the other day, like the amount of money that is made by the company off Soldiers Group Life Insurance, SGLI, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so let's run with that point, David. You know, some people might see that as a negative. Oh, you got a life insurance company on the tallest skyscraper. Oh, that's just because, you know, they're making so much money off of you. Well, I tell you what, when you buy a policy with a mutual life insurance company, you're buying a piece of the company. Do you want to own a piece of a company that barely makes a profit or one that makes massive profits so much that they can actually return a dividend to you throughout your lifetime that eventually totals more than you've ever paid into the policy?
That's right. Yeah. I do. I want the companies that I own to be profitable. I mean,
absolutely.
I think most people with normal functioning brains think like that.
Yeah. Do you think that skyscraper they bought, they just paid cash for it, now they just sit back and live in it? They're leasing those rooms out. Every floor is leased out to a different business. Like, they're making money. That's an asset that's actually going towards their total portfolio return that creates the dividends that they pay back to me every single year. So yes, I love that their name is on the tallest skyscrapers in the world.
Sure. Yeah, that's a very reasonable way to think, I think.
I mean, it's a reasonable way to think as long as you're not a socialist or a Marxist.
Yeah, and I think they're the ones that mostly are, well, we don't have any of them.
They're not listening.
They're not listening.
If you're listening, you're not a socialist. Congratulations.
And they don't have any money.
Yeah, and they don't have any money anyway. They just want
your
money.
They want your money.
They want your money to fund their life insurance policy. Yeah. So, but, you know, the cool thing about thinking like a banker, becoming your own banker, you get to be the depositor, you get to be the lender, and you're also the collector because you got to repay those loans. So you got to be disciplined.
Yeah. So I think, you know, when it comes to policy loans, I've seen maybe just one client actually that I can think of over the last 6 years kind of get into a pickle. But to their credit, right? They got back on track, but they admitted, like, yeah, we've been stealing the peas. They remember that part in the book very well. I was like, mm-hmm. You're stealing the peas. And they're like, yes, we are stealing the peas. And I'm like, stop stealing the peas. And they stopped stealing the peas, you know, repayment plan. But this has been going on for like five years. You know, there's consequence. And I told them, I was like, they're like, well, we don't really have much to show for this policy. I was like, without this policy, you would have a $130,000 personal loan out. Or whatever, at 14% or 15% or something, right? I was like, this is keeping you afloat. They're like, oh, yeah, you're right. I was like, yes. Anyway, it was funny. Yeah, good, great people. And yeah, the behavior is so important, right? And that's why we tell people, like, if you've talked to us in the past, you know, you've been on a call and we tell you, hey, you really need to get some stuff in order before you can start practicing IBC. Like, here's a basic pathway forward. We give that to you. That's because we know that this policy, if we were to issue it, would be the first thing to go when you have a huge relapse. So this is not a process to implement for the financially irresponsible. It takes hard work and discipline to do this and long range thinking. So I'm not saying it can't be done, but you need to get the financial house in order and then come back.
Yeah, good point. So we don't even need to run the math on this because math isn't the point. But the point is that every dollar that you don't put into a system that you control, use from there, and then return it back to that system, it stops doing anything for you. It only has one job.
So, you know, Nelson Nash talked about, you know, there's one pool of money in the world. He talked about the reservoir. You know, how much of that pool of money do you want to control? You know, think about the velocity of money. Nash taught that, you know, it's not just the goal to accumulate, you know, a big pile of money. It's to keep that money moving, keep it in motion, keep it cycling, recycling it in and out, like a revolving door, right? But if you don't repay your loans, that's money that leaves your system and never comes back. That defeats the purpose of building the system in the first place.
Exactly. And it's not keeping money in motion just for the sake of keeping it in motion. So we're not advocating you need to be taking loans to make anything work here. No, you need to be taking loans to replace paying cash and doing bank financing for those other things in life that you would otherwise be doing that with. Right? That's what you take your loans for. It's not that taking a loan is going to make your policy operate better. It's not. It's going to improve your overall wealth system by using those cash value loans instead of paying cash out of the bank and getting bank financing. That's really it. But, you know, that money in motion. It's funny, water has all these terms that that discuss money. Like we talk about liquidity, flow of money, velocity of money.
Stagnant money, not good.
Stagnant, right.
Stagnant water,
yeah,
smelly.
Pool of capital.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting. There's a lot of overlap there.
That's right.
A boatload of cash. Yeah. Right. So, you know, the word I really like that Nelson uses is steal. Like, steals it. That's a pretty big statement. If you say somebody stole something, I mean, one of the Ten Commandments is thou shalt not steal, right? That's a big one. You know, that's made the top 10 list. So I think Nelson uses that word on purpose because you are stealing. What are you stealing from?
Well, you're really stealing from your future capacity, right? I want this private financing, this private banking system someday to be so big I can, you know, meet all my needs, meet their needs, right? That's the whole point of it. I want it to be not only huge, but it's got so much velocity by the time that happens. By the time I get to that point, there's so much velocity of money just inside the policies. Forget having to lend it out to anybody. It becomes a wonderful place just to keep storing money and paying that premium because every dollar is going to be making $2, $3, $4, $5, $6 of cash. And at that point, it's like, great, we're good. Not that I'm going to have the arrival syndrome, so I won't.
Yeah, exactly. I'd say you just need to have some discipline. You don't got to be rich. I mean, I started my first three policies and I was making five figures. I was not rich by any stretch of the imagination. I was making five figures and had a family of four. So, and I started three policies at that time for what I could do at the time, but I was disciplined. Any loans I've taken, I've had a loan repayment method. Even if it took longer than I expected, I still made it happen. Still got it done.
Dave is frugal, everybody. Extremely.
Fiscally responsible.
Fiscally responsible.
Yes, I'm redefining the word. Yeah.
He looks good doing it.
Hey, look good, play good. Tell my son Blake's complaining about his jersey. It's like so big. The sleeves come down to my elbows. It hangs down to my knees. I'm like, yeah, you know, looking good is half the battle, like G.I. Joe said.
Yeah, just play good. Listen, you don't have to be the most disciplined person in every aspect of life. God knows that I can improve in many areas of life
right? You know, these socks may not make it into the hamper every time, right? As an example. But when it comes to policy loan repayment, I'm disciplined, right? I treat my system with respect, right? I want to use that money again. And I don't want to have loans out. I don't want to pay more interest than I otherwise need to, right? So all those things make sense, right? So repay your loans.
Repay your loan, brother.
You don't need to be perfect, but you do need to be consistent. Repayment is just the one place you can't afford to just negotiate yourself away from it, right? It's how you treat the system now and later and into the future is going to matter. So repay your loans.
Nelson Nash built this concept around a central idea that we're all capable of doing what the banks do. We can be the source of our own financing for the things of life. But you have to think like a banker in order to do it, not a borrower.
So don't steal the peas. It sounds like the simplest thing in the world. But it's also the thing that separates the people who look back 20 years and say, this changed everything, from the people who say, I tried that, it didn't really work.
Hey, if this episode landed for you, please share it. Think of one person in your life who they do pretty good with money right now, but they're always striving to do something better. This episode is for them.
And if you're not practicing the infinite banking concept yet, and this is the first time you're hearing any of this, there's a scheduling link in the show description. Read Nelson Nash's book, Becoming Your Own Banker, the 5th edition. Listen to it on Audible as well. Schedule a call with us, 30 minutes, no pressure, and we'll have a great chat.
We'll see you in the next one. Until then, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.